This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 is out now on Exactly Right. New episodes on Mondays. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's that at the foot of my bed? It's spooky and kooky. I'm pretty sure it's dead. It's coming this way. Wait a minute. Hey, I'm ghosted.
I was Hernandez.
Please.
Hey, boo.
It's me, Roz. And welcome to Ghosted by Roz Hernandez, the podcast where I talk to people that I like about things that make me go pee-pee in my panties. Oh my God, I'm going to talk to Ken Bogle from the TV show Living for the Dead, which is now streaming. Oh my God, starting the 18th. Yeah. This episode is out after the show has come out. So, did you like it? What do you think? I mean, I've seen all of the episodes, and the first one that you see is the first one on our road trip, and I think that as the season goes on, you'll see that we all really get closer as friends and as teammates, and I think that that show just gets better and better and better each episode. So stick around, keep watching it. If you haven't finished it yet, tell your friends about it. We want shows like this to be made and to be successful. I mean, it's just so cool that we've got this all queer cast and having a great time. I mean, I get to be silly. There's some moments on that show. I ate a lot of donuts. I ate a lot of donuts out of stress and fear while doing this show. And I kind of was thinking about talking about fear for just a moment here at the top of the show, because I'm all about facing fears. And I know I'm definitely the most scaredy cat of everyone in this group on this show. But most of that for me is like, I don't know, if you told me a really scary story about anything, if you were like, oh, this car that you're about to drive, sometimes the brakes don't work, I'm going to be terrified. And that's how I felt a lot of the time when I went to these locations. It's like people telling me, just so you know, this place is incredibly haunted and there's ghosts that scratch you and slap you. And of course I'm going to be terrified. Nonetheless, I'm skeptical of all this stuff. Yeah. But it's scary. So this experience for me was just so much facing fear. And, you know, I'm a big believer in, like, life starts when you leave your comfort zone. And I like to push myself to face fears. Actually, right before I left for the trip to do all these locations, I went on my first roller coaster at Disney's California Adventure, the one that goes upside down. What is it called? The California Screaming. California Screaming. And honey, I was California screaming. But I did it. And I had never been on something like that before, if you can believe it. So I mean, like that, like stand-up comedy, public speaking, like that kind of stuff scares the shit out of me. One of my biggest fears is sleeping in haunted locations. I've talked over the years, you've heard me talk about leaving in the middle of the night at some of these haunted places I've stayed. And with this, I'm like, I can't leave. I'm stuck here. And trust me, there was a few times when I was looking up on my phone other places to stay in the area, because I'm like, what if I could sneak out? Maybe I could be back by the morning and they wouldn't know that, you know, that I've left. There actually wasn't any place to stay. When we were in Bisbee, Arizona, that's the place when I was like literally looking. I found an Airbnb, and then all the reviews were talking about how the place was haunted. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? No. Anyway, I had to stay all night in these haunted places. Never once slept. Sometimes I would sleep in the morning or during the daytime if I had time to. But when you watch those episodes, I had not slept. Sometimes for 3 days in a row. Not every episode, but like the Clown Motel, the one in Bisbee, Arizona, the Lemp Mansion, the Scottsdale one, which was the mansion that we stayed at that is haunted. That one, I did sleep. I was scared at first, but then eventually I slept because I think the bed was just so comfortable. And I don't know. I was pretty convinced early on that I had figured out what was going on with the... I don't want to ruin it for you, but I feel like I figured it out. I figured out that these ghosts were not going to be messing with me. But anyway, I also, one of my biggest fears, as crazy as this might be to believe, I would say my number one fear, which is very strange, but it's a unique fear that I've had for years now, performing in Los Angeles and being around so many people that leave to go be on TV or whatever. I knew that eventually I would be doing what I love to do, make people laugh, perform, all of it, on TV or in some kind of bigger, on some kind of bigger platform, to the point where it's like kind of out of my control. Like when I perform like locally in smaller venues, I feel like I can kind of control the situation a bit more. But I knew that like one day there's going to come a day where it's out of my hands. And that means that the haters are going to be out there. That means that my privacy is going to go away. Like all of that stuff just has always scared the shit out of me. And I'm facing my fear. You know, when this opportunity for this show came up, I definitely was deep in therapy and preparing for something like that to happen at some point. And when I got the call to do the show, I was like, all right, like, this is what I love. I love to make people laugh. I love the paranormal. I love putting queerness into the paranormal. I have to do this, even though a lot of people are going to see it. And, you know, it's just, it's scary to me. It's really scary to me because I've spent so many years just kind of a local comedian, drag queen, whatever. And also like getting on this podcast network, and I've gotten so many more listeners lately. That's really helped me to prepare for this, because the reception I've gotten from this podcast, being on Exactly Right, and just all these new listeners, you guys have like truly given me so much more confidence in that fear and made me feel like, okay, all right, there's people that like this show. They like what I do. And I'm so grateful that there are really cool people that dig what I do. I don't know. I'm so grateful right now. I really am. But I'm facing fears. Speaking of therapy, one more thing I'll say. Me and my very unique problems. I dedicated at least a full month. I would say 2 months. I dedicated in therapy to sleeping in haunted hotels. I do therapy over the phone video, and I have a wonderful therapist. You know who you are. She sometimes listens to this show, I think. I don't know. I don't know if she does, but if you do, you know who you are. I was telling her, like, I have to sleep in all these haunted locations, and I don't like that. I have just, like, weird sleep things. I need to not be disturbed in the middle of the night, and sleep is my vulnerable time where I just can turn off and I don't have to be looking around every corner, you know, so that I don't get attacked or have to deal with some bullshit. Like, I just want to sleep and be peaceful. And I told her about how I'm going to be sleeping at all these haunted locations. She goes, well, and she's done some ghost hunting of her own. And she goes, well, just listen, just be grateful that you don't have to sleep in the Lemp Mansion. And I was like, bitch, our final episode is at the Lemp Mansion. And yes, I do have to sleep there. So I spent the entire time I was doing this show once a week on doing sessions with my therapist. And we were just like working so hard on sleeping in haunted places thing. And yeah, it turns out I had to go to the Lemp Mansion and she really helped me through it. So I'm a big, big fan of therapy. Take care of the inside of, you know, your brain as much as you can. It's so important. I'm just feeling a lot of gratitude right now, guys. I'm sorry. Okay, we're going to talk to someone that I'm not afraid of, the one and only Ken Bogle. On with the show. I am now joined by my uncle, my tío, Uncle Ken Bogle. Hello. You really are an uncle.
I am Uncle Ken. I realized that I was never going to have children. So I was never going to be a daddy, traditionally.
Right.
So I have adopted a ton of nieces and nephews, and they all call me Uncle Ken because I'm always tying up shoelaces or holding doors open or wiping somebody's snotty nose, helping you down a stoop. You know, I'm just, that's what I do. I should have been on Full House, I think, you know, before they went nuts. I should have been on Full House. I could have been an uncle.
Yeah, definitely on the TV show Living for the Dead, which starts streaming on Hulu the 18th of October. You're the uncle of the group, for sure.
That makes me so incredibly happy. You have no idea how much that means to me. Because, like, I've realized last night that I have actually been sad after we wrapped because I've not had enough of you all in my life. Such a bummer.
Oh, because you are in Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yeah.
Like Colonel Sanders.
That famous recipe, sis.
Original or extra crispy with you?
I am extra crispy. I never undercook anything. It is extra crispy over at my place.
I want to say, before we get too far into this, and please don't tell the others I said this.
Okay.
You are my favorite person in this cast.
Roz, it's complete and total BS. Now, I know it.
No, it's not. How dare you?
I mean, I think you would be there for all of us individually, and you love us all. Totally. I totally believe that. But I think your favorite, and I'm gonna put you on blast. I think your favorite's Juju. I see the way you look at Juju, sis.
I love Juju. I mean, Juju is like just a work of art.
Yeah.
She's just so gorgeous.
Yeah.
But she's also somebody that is so powerful. And I'm like, I'm never worried about her. Like, I'm just not. She's just so powerful. And I mean, I really think that she brings me so much comfort when we went to like all those spooky ass places where I'm like, Juju will save us.
Yeah. I think I counted twice. Actually, three. There's three times that you call out specifically to Juju when you get spooked and scared. And
I'm like, Juju!
Yeah.
We got a demon!
We got a demon. Come on down here.
You know, let's talk about demons for a second, because you talk about that on the show, and I do talk about it, but I don't know if it comes off this way when you watch it, but I think people that listen to this podcast would know that I'm very skeptical of all things paranormal. And I don't even know where I'm at on demons, to be honest. I don't know if I believe that that's a real thing, if it's in the biblical sense or whatever. I don't know. I do think there's dark energies in this world. But it seems like you're really like a believer in this idea of demons, right?
Yeah. So for me, I grew up Christian, but I converted to Buddhist 12 years ago last month. And in that, I've discovered that demon is a term that's used in both. My interest in the other theological paths or spiritual paths in which they're mentioned kicked in. So I started kind of, you know how I am, I get obsessive and start red stringing. And yeah, they're in like all kinds of different spiritual or religious paths. I myself think that not only are there demons and devils in our spiritual lives, but I think that they're also fully embodied in the physical form in flesh and blood. I think anytime someone steals your light, anytime someone steals your joy or your life power, you know, your light, I think it's easy to say that that's a demon that you have to struggle with. I also think that it's one of those things from one of your earlier podcasts that you had mentioned about addiction and how people say, I have to wrestle with my demons. I do think that addiction ties into that. I have seen people be totally possessed and certain rituals done in many different religions, and they be completely different people, whether it's psychosomatic or not. doesn't matter to that individual who just got their life back, you know?
Wait, when you say you've seen people be possessed, like, are you talking like literally you've seen them like there's a demon inside of a human?
Yeah, yeah. I don't often tell this story, but even I myself have a story of possession.
Tell me.
Okay, so it goes like this. When I was 15, I met this 21-year-old guy. My parents found out I was gay and they kicked me out, right? So I was homeless at 15. So I shack up with this guy and he was big, beautiful blue eyes and we were all great and groovy. And he used to take me around when somebody would say, hey, I want to do a reading with Ken, or can Ken come over and like check out my new place or these other things. So he would take me. He took me to this house. It was like a Sunday evening and I did a walkthrough. And as I walked through, I picked up that there was an inhuman entity that was very, very heavy and dark. No big deal. Came back home. We laid down in bed later that evening and I started to become restless. And I felt like there was something else in the room. And I opened my eyes and there was a dark figure that was suspended from the ceiling, kind of hunched, like attached to the ceiling. Kind of like a Spider-Man sort of move.
Oh, my God.
But its head was turned toward me.
Stop, Ken. This is too scary.
His head was turned toward me. I say he because it felt definitely masculine. I've never felt a feminine energy that evil before. And when it noticed that I noticed it, it slid down the wall, up the floor, and came to the foot of the bed and just hovered. I started to panic. And then that's when it went under the sheets, which I could see the energy coming up through the sheets. And it went up through my legs, up through my spine. I felt as if somebody had grabbed a hold of my spine. This is when I start to lose touch. And it's explained to me that like a roller coaster that goes clink by clink as it kind of rolls up, that my spine did the same thing.
No.
My partner who was in bed with me said that it was like a whip, that my back just went vertebrae by vertebrae up until I was straight sitting in bed. And then he said I twisted.
You were straight?
For a minute. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You knew that back when Clinton was in office. I was doing women all the time. But anyway, so he says at this point that I turned at my hips and that I went like a great deep sigh. And he said that it was so ice cold that it sent chills through him. I whipped around, and when I whipped around, I came to myself. And that's when I felt what felt like hands wrapped around my spine and they started whipping me. My body went forward and threw back, like exactly what you've seen on The Exorcist.
Stop.
And that I went straight back up, twisted again, and giggled. And then
no!
I came back to myself in tears, in absolute tears. He had a grandmother who was very active in the local church. She's no longer with us, bless her. May she rest in peace. But she came over with some folks and they anointed me with holy oil and anointed the house. And that's just one of the things that I've seen like that.
Wait, so the holy oil, it took care of it and never came back again? It never...
Oh, no, it rears its ugly head on occasion. I feel like once it got to know me, it hovers. And that's the one line that you've not seen me draw. It almost happened in the series, Living for the Dead. It almost happened at a particular location, but Juju kind of prayed over me and it pushed it further back. I didn't say anything to her about it. I didn't say anything to anybody, but I was very close to that same place, that horrifically scary, dark, and cold place that I was in one of the episodes.
Wait, so you have a demon that's just hanging out looking at you at all times?
I don't think that he's around all the time. I think that he comes around occasionally. I've since then met two other non-human entities that I've expelled from people's houses. The others I've seen in church.
You've seen in church?
Yeah.
What are they doing in there? I feel like they're not supposed to be in there.
There was a man who walked naked into a church in southeastern Kentucky, completely off his gourd. They had to deliver him from this evil attachment, like on the spot that Sunday in front of everybody, you know? And I was there when an elderly woman had to be pinned down by, I think it was four guys and a couple of ladies. She was like rage.
Oh, my God. super granny.
Yeah, it wasn't even like a super exorcism, like a legit exorcism. They call it a deliverance. It was a deliverance.
Oh my God, Ken. I feel like you have 1,000 stories, because how long have you been in this world, in the other world?
31 years.
31 years.
Yeah.
Okay, how did it start?
So I'd always been different. I could always tell you who was on the telephone before they would call, or when the phone would ring. And this is before caller ID, when we had one phone that was attached to the kitchen wall with a long cord, you know, back then. Like, I would just know things, and I would be able to interpret dreams. I could see auras and things. Anyway, it really started in earnest. Like, I was 8 and we had moved into this house. The house was a split level, and in the backyard, some distance away, was one of the oldest cemeteries that I've ever seen in my life. To the point where, like, some of the tombstones were basically just whittled down rocks. When I lived there, I lived on the same level as the cemetery. So we were only yards apart. At night, every night when we moved in there, I would hear the sound of someone walking, but their leg, something was wrong with one of their legs. And I would hear step, 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 it would come to the edge of my room, and I would immediately become panicked. And my bed was set up so that I just looked to the right, and there was the door frame. And I looked to the right, and every time I heard that sound, and it got close. I'm getting emotional, but because it was so horrific, Ross. I would look to the right, and this old man would turn his head and look into the room at me. And I knew that he saw me, and he knew I saw him. And then he would walk in. And then three other women would walk behind him, and they all gathered around my bed, and they all came within inches of my face, and they weren't visibly screaming, but there was anger and there was hatred. Like, you know, when somebody's in your face and they're really super close, and you, and they're angry, they don't have to say a word. You just feel it. Right. Uh-huh. And I couldn't breathe. And I'd scream and cry. And one day I was chased up the staircase by this male spirit who was just on me, all over me. It was horrific. And I finally went to my granny's house for the weekend, and she said, "Ken Jr., you look like shit." So, this is granny's way of saying, "What's wrong, honey? I love you." You know, she smoked Durell cigarettes and read dirty books. You know, like, granny was just like, "You look like shit." You know, like, very Cloris Leachman kind of. So I just broke down and cried and told her, and she said, "Honey, don't tell anybody else in the family, because you know how your daddy is. He was a religious zealot." And she said, "If he finds out, you know what he'll do." And I said, "I know." And she said, "So granny will help you through it, and I'll teach you how to do what it is I do, and I'll keep you safe, and you'll start sleeping again." So that started a series of weekend visits with granny that I learned how to discern properly between good and evil. I learned how to engage safely with spirit. I learned how to read palms. I learned how to read nature. I learned what herbs do what. Since then, that information's left, but she used to take me on nature walks, and she would explain spirit to me and explain nature to me, and how they're inseparable and how we are inseparable.
Oh,
and
wow. I mean, was she a witch, or did she not use that term, or what would you say?
She would have never used that term. To granny, it was just Southern. This is what Southern women do. You know, you're a granny who lives up in the mountains, and you make tinctures when somebody gets bit by a snake. You make tinctures when somebody gets stung by a bee. She was just an Appalachian granny witch. That's what she was. But she would have never said the word witch. Not ever. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that was 31 years ago.
This is high praise coming from me.
Okay.
Because of the people I know. You're the most dramatic human being I've ever
You
met.
Are kidding me.
The other day you go, "Roz, you are funnier than Lucille Ball."
You are funnier than Lucille Ball.
Ken, you can't say that.
The hell I can. I just did.
Well, I will say, you are such a generous laugher. I'm around comedians a lot, and, you know, it's hard to get a laugh out of a comedian. And you are such a generous laugher that you certainly make me feel funny, and I appreciate that.
Always. I'll do that always, as long as you'll have me.
See, this is why I say you're my favorite in the show. Don't tell the
others. I won't. Secret's safe with me, babe.
So you also are a tarot reader, and you gave me... Now listen, you don't know how many funky girls with a deck of cards I have met in my life. I've had a lot of readings in this town of Los Angeles, and I've had some very good ones. My friend Lizzie Cooperman is amazing. I'll just say right now, upcoming guest, Rachel True, one of the stars of the movie The Craft. She's an amazing tarot reader, and she got me good. Ken, you got me good. I think it was the first night of our experience. We were in the Clown Motel, and we had a slumber party, you and I.
Yeah. Yeah.
Platonic.
Yeah.
And you were generous enough to pull out the deck of cards and gave me a reading, charged me a couple $100s.
Oh, Roz, I did not. Roz Hernandez, don't you?
I'm kidding. It was on the house, the haunted house. And it was good.
Yeah.
You did a spread that you called The Mirror.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about tarot for a second, because I think every single episode you give a tarot reading to somebody that is affected by these hauntings, and you definitely get people good. When did the tarot start?
The tarot started 31 years ago, so the same time.
Did your granny teach you how to do it?
My Aunt Caroline came over with a deck of poker cards, like, you know, the bicycle deck.
Okay.
And went back to Granny's and said, oh, look what I can do. You know, I can tell your fortune with poker cards. And she said, that's cute. Do what big men do and do tarot, is what she called it. Tarot.
Tarot!
Yeah. All my Welsh friends call it tarot as well, as a matter of fact. But anyway, she said, here's $20. We'll go down to the bookstore and we'll get you a deck of tarot cards. And she said, I'm going to pick up a new book anyway. And she had something with Fabio on the cover and his hair was all whipping back.
Fabio.
And I marched out very secretly with this little Alice in Wonderland deck, because I knew if I'd been caught, our friendship of the spiritual journey would be over, Granny and I. So I started using them then. And since then, there's not much I can't do with a deck of cards. Not much. I even use them in my mediumship readings, in my psychic work. I use tarot for all of it.
You did something to me where you were like, is this true? And I said something to you, again, my skeptical self, where I'm like, how often is this true? And you're like, always. Or you said something where you were like, this has never been wrong.
Yeah, the mirror is never wrong, ever.
I couldn't believe it. It was so specific. And that's the thing, like, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on psychics and tarot and everything, but some people can interpret the tarot in such an intuitive way that is, from my experience, otherworldly. And I definitely have seen your psychic abilities. I don't know that on the TV show we see a ton of your, like, medium abilities, but you have a lot of that, too.
I think, like, everybody in the world is born with an inherent intuitive gift. I think eventually science will prove it as an evolutionary trait. And in my psychic development classes that I teach, I bring that up first. We are all psychic to some degree, and it is evolutionary. And I always tell the same kind of anecdote that back in the day, way, way back in the day, when we were all in the bush trying to gather a berry, we had to know if there was something in the dark stalking us. So we developed these things, like, without being able to see it or without being able to hear it, the hair standing up on the back of our necks, goosebumps. We instinctively knew when to run, when to hide, when to play dead. Without Google, without YouTube, it was just an inherently, it's an intrinsic part of the human consciousness. And I hope that one day science will prove it as an evolutionary trait. I really do. But I've always been really, really big about including tarot into that, because the tarot gives me an extra layer of detail.
Mm-hmm.
I think Logan Taylor is the best medium I've ever seen. And I know a lot of mediums. He's in my top three. I would put him up there with some of the celebrities who are no longer with us. I think he's great. And so whenever a mediumship thing came up, I would probably make note of it, or a psychic thing would come to me and I would explain it a little bit. But I always backed up and said, but that's Logan's department. So like even in big readings, I would say, oh, I'm picking somebody up. And then I would say, but that's Logan's department. Now, that never made it in the show, but I try to stay in my lane.
I've actually said this before in the show, like, it would be so interesting to have multiple psychics in a location together and see, like, who picks up what and, like, comparing notes, that kind of a thing. Were there moments where Logan said something and you're like, yeah, that person was trying to talk to me, too?
No. What did happen, though, and it happened in the haunted desert, mansion in the desert or haunted desert.
The place in Scottsdale. Yeah, the mansion with Mia. Yeah.
Yes. So it was the first time I'd ever done it. But Logan and I sat in real time, side by side, without speaking to each other. And he was doing his psychic readings and writing his answers down. I was doing my psychic tarot readings, writing my answers down. Uh-huh. And they just complemented each other beautifully. The thing about psychics is you can get three in a room. You can get three psychics in a room. They're each one going to add a layer, if they're good. They'll each one add a layer of truth or reality to it, or a level of detail to it that you might not get otherwise. One psychic alone is wonderful, great, and fantastic. But if you can get three together that really know what they're talking about and are really good at what they do, you can be astounded by the information that comes forward. And that's what it's like when I'm with Logan. Things that I would say that didn't make it on the show, Patty at the Limp Mansion, I didn't say a word to Logan about what I felt in that reading, and he just nailed it. When it's over, I always go up to him and I hug him and I kiss him and I say, oh my God, boy, like that was the shit. Didn't say any of these things to him and he would know it. And vice versa, he would never mention any of things to me that he ever picked up. And we would kind of go back and forth. And then Juju being Juju was iconic and always finding out everything, you know, that she does with her shells and her inherent gifts. Just amazing group.
What are your psychic abilities?
I try to keep it very general because I think, like, I'm precognitive and postcognitive. I'm clairvoyant, clairsentient. Of course, there's empath. Like, there's all these different things. I'm a big dreamer. I've been studying and developing for 31 years to the point where I just stopped labeling it.
Right.
Put me anywhere and I will get something. If something is there, I will pick something up. Yeah. So I don't really label them.
Are you picking up anything from me?
Yes. Yes. And your Emmy is on its way. Don't worry.
Emmy?
You're going to win an Emmy because you're just going to be the best comedic performance in a reality TV series.
I don't think that's a category.
No, it's not. And I've looked it up and Googled it and I'm furious.
Okay. Why do you think that none of my dead people want to talk to me? Am I that annoying?
I think it's like, with my experience of those who have passed on, they don't want to talk to you. They don't want you to know that they're there. They don't want to disrupt you. Or they're at peace and they're trying to chill out and they're trying to rest and relax.
I guess so.
Or they do try to speak to you and your skeptic mind, the skeptic mind will sometimes explain away responses or will explain away experiences. Like, I always explain to people when they're reading with me, you must be open. If you're not open to this, this will be an exercise in futility. Like, it will just be worthless. So it's nice to have a good, clear, open mind and to have a really good medium.
I've had so many readings and stuff that I haven't even talked about on this podcast, but I've had world-renowned mediums talk to me, and I try to get them to talk to my dead people, and never once.
Yeah. They could just be very guarded. I've read for a woman once whose husband had been up to no good and he refused to speak to any medium she'd ever been to. And we were locked in this dark office that I had at the time. And I was doing a reading for her and I got this overwhelming sense of secrets. And, you know, when I feel like there's a secret, I got to sauce it out, you know? So we were in there for like an hour. And then finally it hit me. I was like, your husband was cheating on you. And she was like, that's the first time anybody has ever even contacted him. And yes, I just found his telephone and saw all the messages and the websites.
Oh, the websites.
Yeah. And she was like, he was telling me he was playing softball with the boys and he was out doing rah, rah, rah. And I was like, and the spirit said to me, actually, he used the F word, you know, the other word for gays and queers. And he was very violently mad that I had said it and that I had discovered it.
Ooh.
Some spirits don't want to talk. They don't want to communicate. They want the living being to be that. And they're behind you. They're spiritually there to guard you and take care of you, but they don't interfere.
Okay, I guess I won't be offended.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Ken, let's just talk about the TV show a little bit.
Okay.
What do you think?
I am God's pickiest creature when it comes to TV. And I when it comes to TV...
You're God.
I am.
This is what I talk about. You're so dramatic, and I love it.
I'm God's pickiest...
I love it. That's a compliment from me.
And I thank you for that. I don't know any other way to be. I'm just a Southern dramatic queen, I think, in my blouse and bowler, you know. Anyway, I watch a lot of television, specifically paranormal television, because like you, a lot of my friends are on these shows, you know. A lot of them are there and doing that work. And I've known a lot of them for a very long time.
Yeah, and you're like big in that paranormal convention kind of world. Like you do a lot of those events and all the paranormal stuff.
Yeah. So I try to support my friends and watch and listen to their stuff. Some of it is amazing. And some of it makes it very clear to me as to what I will never do. I would create a subcategory of I watch paranormal television sometimes with people that I don't care for on it, like Zach Bagans.
Oh,
no.
Shots fired.
No, I'm just saying it's just not the way I would do it. He's not the one for me, but I'm sure I'm not the one for him. So from that, I've developed a pretty good taste as to what good paranormal television is. And the reality of the show Living for the Dead is that it's not a paranormal television show. That's not what it is. This is a whole new category. This is like an 8-part mini series about 5 friends in a tricked out crazy RV that are going into situations to help the living by healing the dead. That's what it is. For me, from day one, I turned around and was like, we're not filming a paranormal television show. This is in no way what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And watching it as I have now, it's very clear to me that I've never seen something so beautiful. I've never seen anything so in touch. And I have not seen any paranormal television show that contributes to the conversation of life after death in the way that we've done our show. I just think it's remarkable. I've picked it apart and I have 0 notes.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, I think that from having so many years of watching those shows, it is interesting how having done one now, it's such a different experience when you're in it. You know, I find myself a little bit less critical as time goes on of those shows now that I've done one. And I mean, those are not easy.
No.
They are not easy to make. They are emotionally exhausting.
Yeah.
Physically, there's just a lot going on. You know, some of these places that we went to were not the most comfortable places to be. Like, freezing cold. We did this in January, February, March. Some of them, you know, Midwest and whatever. Long hours.
Yeah.
Staying up all night. I feel a lot of empathy for the people that have done these shows. And now I think we are doing something different.
Yeah.
There's a lot of elements to this show that are not, they have not been seen in other paranormal shows. Powerful moments with the people that are experiencing these horrors. Some of the comedy that's in it. It's just like a very different kind of show.
Yeah. I feel like it broke the mold. They said back in 1973 when The Exorcist was made that it hit. It hit everybody in an individual way, completely different than it would hit someone else, you know, but that it hit. And I think that's what this does. I mean, is it, you know, a great big 2-hour movie? No, it's an 8-hour movie. And it is just dripping with reality and dripping with heart and real horror moments. I mean, me in a clown motel, that's not, I don't care for that. And it's a real panic that you see in my face. And I think it's going to hit. I think it will hit. And for each person in an individual way, but it will still stand alone as the most groundbreaking paranormal television show that's been done to date.
Drama.
Drama.
What was the scariest place you went to?
Okay, scary in like the physical surroundings, clown motel.
Well, yeah. And again, I'm trying not to take offense to that because my father is a professional clown.
Yeah.
I was a professional clown as a child. I love clowns.
But since the show, though, you'll be proud of me. The other night I sat and watched Stephen King's It the whole way through. didn't even, I mean, I flinched. I got up sometimes to go to, you know, get a piece of pizza or like have a Diet Coke.
Yeah, but you act like that's a horror movie. That is a sweet movie about a clown trying to bond with some children in a very innocent way.
Yes. Let's rip another arm off, Georgie, and see how that plays out. It's horrific.
That's how some clowns say hi. You have to understand, you're talking about my culture here. This is my heritage.
I'm so sorry, Ross. Please accept my apologies.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to be insensitive. I will just say that I'm working on it, and I am developing I'm growing, period. I'm growing.
Thank you.
Spiritually or like paranormally, the scariest place that we were in had to be the Copper Queen.
Same.
Yeah, that was horrific. But I'm really bummed out there wasn't a camera there when I came to knock on your door one night.
Let's tell the story.
You tell it.
In total defense of the entire team that worked on the show, we shot so many hours and there's five of us and there's so many things that went on. So, you know, you're not going to always see every single moment.
Right.
But this night in particular was so fucking scary. Basically, long story short, CJ and I were fucking terrified after just nonstop dread. That's the only word that ever came to mind when I was at the Copper Queen in Bisbee, Arizona. Dread. Just nonstop paranormal activity.
Yeah.
And that's coming from, again, someone that doesn't always think everything's a ghost. We were so scared because we were staying on the haunted floor and CJ was keeping me company because I could not sleep. And CJ was also terrified. We are in my room with the door shut, terrified. And then all of a sudden we hear, "Ross?" And CJ looks at me and he goes, "Someone just said your name." "CJ? They said my name."
Okay.
And CJ and I literally run into the bathroom of my hotel room. We open up the shower that has a curtain, and we go into the shower with the curtain closed because we were so scared. And then we realized that it was you.
I'm sorry. I was staying in that bedroom with that demon. And I couldn't sleep because of the trigger object kept going off. And I wanted to get with somebody so I wasn't alone. I got out of the room, went down the hall and kind of scurried by all the doors just to see if I could hear anybody. Then I heard you and Siege. And I was like, oh, my God, they're in there. And so I just tapped. I was just like, Roz? and then I said, CJ? And then like I heard, boom, 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 like bodies slapping together. And then I heard what sounded like somebody dropped an armful of frozen turkeys in a bathtub. I literally turned around and I was like, lot of good of help they are. Like, what a load of help. I literally could not get over. It sounded like somebody threw an armful of frozen turkeys in a bathtub, just in panic.
I mean, yeah, we were an armful of frozen turkeys in that moment. We were so scared because other unexplainable things that didn't have an explanation that were, I believe, to be paranormal happened in that night. And I remember there was like crazy wind that night and my shutters were literally like coming off the wall and banging back. It was just dread.
Yeah, that is a palpable feeling from the Copper Queen. It is dreadful. And it's so heavy and dark. And to find out I was sleeping in a bedroom where something very tragic had happened. I couldn't, period. I just could not, period. And there I went to go look for my friends and they're just all shacked up in a room having the kiki of their lives.
Yeah.
I'm moments from pissing myself. Like, can somebody let me in? Alex, finally, we got together and we ended up watching old British television in my bedroom. Like, we got a different room and we just spent the night cuddled up. And I was like, thank you for being here.
You're so lucky that we didn't open the door and me with my high heel. I didn't just kick you right in the fucking face. Because that is my reaction. If I would have had a super soaker filled with holy water, you would have gotten it. You would have been blasted into the next dimension. Now I realize that next season I'm going to have one of those just to be safe.
Just in case Ken comes knocking around in season two.
Ken, do you want to hear some ghost voices?
I have waited for you to ask me that question for the longest time. Yes, please.
It's time for EVPs or EV Please. All right, Ken, as a listener of this show, you already know this, but for anyone new around here, what I do is I go to the internet. I find alleged ghost voices. People believe they've captured a ghost saying some shit. I'm going to play them for you.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me what you hear. Then I'll give you a couple of options, one of them being the correct answer of what the ghost hunter believes the ghost is saying. This first EVP was posted by Pissed Ghost. That's their name on YouTube. It's actually P-I-S-T Ghost. It stands for Paranormal Investigation Society of Tennessee.
Okay.
Pissed Ghost. That's amazing.
I love that.
This was recorded at the Waverly Hills Sanatorium,
ooh,
which is a place that you and I went to on the TV show.
Yep.
What is this ghost saying? It's a faint voice. It kind of sounds like a parrot.
Yeah.
Might be a cockatoo that someone brought with them ghost hunting. A lot of background noise, but let's listen again.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me try it again. Any guesses?
No, I don't have any guesses offhand. It's so faint, isn't it? It's like the front noise is so hard to hear past. What are the options?
Okay. Is it A, calling Dr. Marcus? Is it B, I got my Doc Martens?
Okay, which I wore, yeah.
Is it C, I'm not your mother? Or is it D, I'm not Ken Boggle, which is something that only Ken Boggle would say. And so I'm not convinced entirely that you weren't there.
Yeah, it's actually, I don't think any of them, but I thought it said, it's not what you're here for.
Oh, well, that is not an option.
So I'm going to go with D. I am not Ken Boggle.
They believe it's A, calling Dr. Marcus. Let me play it again.
Okay.
They think it's like over a PA, kind of like the ghost of, which is possible. Maybe there was a Dr. Marcus, that it is an old tuberculosis sanatorium.
Yeah. The idea that it's coming from a PA is very kind of poignant. I can get with that.
I think it's coming from a PA. R-R-O-T. I really think that that is a macaw that flew by and said, I'm not your mother. Okay, here's another one. This was posted on YouTube by Mr. Tenacious One. And this is just a random one. I apologize. There's not really much connection here.
Okay.
But this is at Union Station in Ogden, Utah. What is this ghost saying, Ken Boggle? Ooh, a more whispery one.
Yeah, I love those.
It sounds like a whisper of somebody right next to an AC unit. All right, let's play it again. Any guesses?
No, no guesses.
Let me play it again.
All right.
Nothing.
No.
You don't got no guess?
No guess.
All right. Is it A, what bands don't you like? Is it B, is that what you like? Is it C, I tried to touch the light? Or D, my pants are too tight?
I think it's B.
You think it's B, which is that what you like?
Yeah.
They believe it's C, I tried to touch the light.
Oh, let's hear it again.
Yeah, I hear that.
I think we should have also had E. Let's just be friends.
I think you're confusing that with what I've said to you multiple times. Stop.
We can still be friends. That's what that ghost is saying. We can still be friends.
Oh. Ken, you have told me that you're deeply, madly in love with me. That's another thing that you've said to me.
It is absolutely true. I feel like we're the best thing since divorced Sonny and Cher.
You know, we kind of look like them a little bit.
We do.
In some crazy way.
Next Halloween party we throw, we got to be Sonny and Cher. I will shave my beard for that.
Ooh, I would love to be Cher for Halloween. Speaking of me, what was your favorite moment with me when we shot the TV show?
I have three favorite moments. I'll do them really quick because I know we only have an hour and I'm so sorry.
Three? Hey, listen, if it's about me, we have time. Keep them coming. It's okay.
Okay, cheers. One, when you pushed me down to get away from the demon.
Where was that? Oh, that was at Waverly Hills.
That's iconic.
I did push you down. I think it's in the final. Like,
it is in the final.
It's briefly, yeah.
The other one is you, and any time you've had a donut near your mouth hole, any time.
Yeah, I do eat a lot of donuts on the show. And I want to make it clear to everyone watching at home, that is real. I swallowed.
Yes.
Okay? A lot of times when people eat donuts on TV shows, they have a spit bucket. You don't see that part. I swallowed every single inch of every donut.
And then licked your fingers.
I licked the box.
You sure did. But the thing I just saw last night that is the number one is when you're at the Palomino and you got dragged because of your hair. Your reaction to that, I left my body. I just lost it.
That was when we went to the strip club, the legendary Palomino in Las Vegas. And everybody was having ghost experiences but me. And once again, I was like, why don't ghosts have any interest in me? I used to feel like ghosts loved me. And then I realized I don't think those were ghosts. I think I got medicated. But at this point in my life, ghosts don't want anything to do with me. And I was like, what is going on? And that day in particular, I was very self-conscious about my hair because I'm not very good at styling hair. And there was also a moment where we walked into the building, a gust of wind messed up my hair really bad. And
yeah.
And I said, is it because of my hair? And the ghost said, yes, that's why they don't like me.
And your reaction, it's chef's kiss. Like, it is so good. I actually got up and just walked down the hallway laughing my ass off. Chef's kiss. You're iconic.
Thank you. But like, what's like your favorite moment from just like the 8 months, whether it's on the TV show or not, like stuff that we did together that was fun? Because, you know, I love to talk to paranormal TV show people about, like, what do you guys do when you're not, like, hunting ghosts and you're still out there doing the show?
This is going to be very anticlimactic for anybody who isn't me. So, sorry, y'all.
Great. All right. Well, that's at least 4 million people.
My favorite moment was when we were in Scottsdale and we were doing the seance, as you termed it, and I held your hand, and when the chandelier shook a little, it kind of swayed, you grabbed hold a little tighter with your hand in mine, and it made me feel like you believed that I was there to keep you safe. It was a really heartwarming moment for me because for the longest time, I thought you really genuinely did not like me. And it was in that moment when you held my hand, I was like, she does feel me. And from that point on, every time you looked at me with warmth, it threw me. I just was head over heels for you every single day.
Oh, Ken. God, I'm good at faking it.
Yes.
Now, you're so lovable. You're such a lovable person. Ken.
Yes, ma'am.
I am so honored to get to share this experience with you of being on a TV show. It's crazy. I can't believe we did it, but we did.
Yes, ma'am.
We got to work together. We got to meet each other. And I'm sad to say I will never talk to you again after we get off the Zoom.
Roz Hernandez, you almost had me emotional. I almost had a little moment where I got teary-eyed because I thought you were going to say something sweet. I should have known better. I should have just known better.
I apologize, Kemp, but we will not be airing this episode. This was my way of saying goodbye.
Oh.
I want it to be clear that it's very fun to bully Ken because you have such a lovable laugh and you know that I'm joking. And anytime someone as sweet as can be, I like to knock them down a few pegs.
I love you making fun of me.
You're so fun to make fun of. Hey, tell people where you want them to find you, what you got going on.
You can go to kenboggle.com. If you want to contact me for conventions or something like that, you can do so on the contact page. If you'd like to have a reading, which I do private readings, either in person, on phone, or video, you can go to the readings page and fill out the contact form there. And my new assistant will be in touch.
Ooh! Also, if anyone happens to be in a gas station in the Kentucky area,
Roz Hernandez,
go to the hot dog area. This is not innuendo.
No.
Ken Boggle loves a gas station hot dog.
Yeah.
And on at least one occasion, I was in a car with you with the windows rolled up because it was cold out.
Yeah.
And the smell that was coming from that back seat has not left my nose. I do not like the smell of hot dogs or ketchup or pickles or any of that.
I eat them naked. I just love a good, plain,
this
no
is too
sauce.
Much information.
Just a roller dog, baby, right between the bun.
Oh, I thought you were saying you get naked when you eat them.
No, I eat, you know, hot dogs naked without anything on them, you know.
You made it sound like you get fully naked when you eat a gas station hot dog.
Roz, I did not make it sound.
Yes, you did. You said, I eat gas station hot dogs naked.
I said, I eat them naked. Now I hear it. Yes, okay. My apologies.
So to be clear, for the record, Ken Boggle does not get butt naked in gas stations and start eating hot dogs.
I wait until I get home like anybody else who is brought up right.
And then you take off all your clothes.
Oh my God, just me in a bowler hat.
Ken, this is inappropriate.
I've loved it. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for doing it, Ken.
My pleasure, babe.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Ken Boggle and his hats. You know he was wearing one of those hats when we were talking. Hey, check out the show. It's called Living for the Dead, and it is streaming now on Hulu. Tell your friends about it. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I love you all, both living and dead. But if I didn't ask you to haunt me, don't haunt me. Okay, bye! This has been an Exactly Right production. Want to share your paranormal experience on the podcast? I read stories out loud, and sometimes I'll even call you. So email me at ghostedbyroz@gmail.com. You can send a DM or voice message to the show's Instagram at ghostedbyroz. Give us a follow while you're there. And follow me, Roz, on Instagram at Roz Hernandez and on TikTok and Twitter at It's Roz Hernandez. My senior producer is the startling Jiha Lee. Associate producer is the alarming Christina Chamberlain. This episode was mixed and sound designed by the eerie Edson Choi. My guest booker is the petrifying Patrick Kottner. Additional production support from the hair-raising Hannah Kyle Crichton. My theme music is by the spine-chilling Brendan Lynch Salomon. Artwork by the spooky Vanessa Lilac. Photography by the terrifying Elizabeth Karen. Executive produced by the chilling Karen Kilgariff, the spooky Georgia Hardstark, and the frightening Danielle Kramer. Follow Ghosted by Roz Hernandez on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you like what you hear, rate and review the show. Visit exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Ghosted by Roz Hernandez merch.